The following presentation is a production of WLWstudios.com. You are listening to a WLW Studios production, available Fridays on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and our home, WLWstudios.com. Live every second Saturday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Rant EM Radio. Broadcasting from the Midnight Jury Compound at WLW Studios North, outside of New York City, and proud to be your guide back to the last old school generation of the 80s and 90s. This is the Midnight Jury.
It's Friday night, and the mood is right. We're gonna have some fun, show you how it's done, TGI.
Listening to the Midnight Jury, coming to you on our normal Friday night on WLWstudios.com, or maybe you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or Player FM. And I am your host for the evening, the 21st Century Broadcasting Marvel, Midnight Mike Norenganger. I hope everybody's having a great night. I am. It is a cold night here on the Midnight Jury compound at WLW Studios North, right outside of New York City. It's chilly. It is a chilly, chilly, chilly winter night. I just came in from, I had a fire pit going outside the studio. The smell is still on me. There's nothing more I enjoy than the smell of a bonfire or campfire or anything like that. It's a comforting smell. And anyone who lives up here in the Northeast, or maybe the Northwest, any cold temperature area, I think we can all relate to that smell. The only thing that would be better is if there was nice meat, maybe crackling bacon or burgers or hot dogs cooking over it. But I can't complain. Tonight, we're going to have a very special episode because we have a very special guest. For those of you who are tuning in to hear my interview with our guest this evening, I just want to let you know here in the intro that the Midnight Jury, we are an 80s and 90s podcast. We celebrate everything 80s and 90s, from film, specifically horror films, but regular films, pop culture films from the 80s and 90s, music. We review albums from the 80s and 90s. And when we do that, we actually play the album front to back. And of course, you know, for copyright reasons, we can't just play it. So we talk over and give you our thoughts as it plays track for track. And that's usually on the second Saturday of every month, because on that day, we go live on rantemradio.com. Or you could go to our website, WLWstudios.com, and right up at the top in the menu bar, it says Listen Live. You click on that, and it gives you two options to listen to us every second Saturday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So please join us for that. And like I said, if someone is listening to us for the first time, usually I'm joined by my co-hosts. I have my my other host, Calvin Brody. I have my co-hosts, Adam Henning, Tony Broccadetta. Sometimes my wife, Sydney Chadwick, joins me. And we always have a blast. It's no nonsense. It's not PC. You know, we say what we want to say, and we back up what we say. So if we say something that, you know, it rubs you the wrong way, we say either don't listen or come at us with it. You know, tell us you didn't like it and let us come back at you. You know, we have no problem with arguing. And then when it gets down to it, you know, you let it all go. You can agree to disagree, things like that. But we pull no punches here on the Midnight Jury. And like I said, at WLWstudios.com, it's this simple. I'm typing it in right now, WLWstudios.com. I want to let you know how easy it is to get our entire, almost our entire back catalog of 250 plus episodes. You just scroll down here. I'm scrolling down. You go past all the dates, and on the left-hand side of the screen, it says categories. And all you do is find Midnight Jury. You click on Midnight Jury, and all of our shows just right in a row will come up. Just 2 weeks ago, we did episode 242. I know I said 250 plus because we had a spinoff, The After Midnight. We've done bonus episodes, stuff like that. But our last episode, we did Jason Goes to Hell from 1993, the ninth installment in the Friday the 13th series. Over Christmas, we do a double Christmas episode. We do a double Halloween episode. For Christmas, we did The Santa Claus with Tim Allen. And for all of you crazy horror fans, we did the 1997 movie Jack Frost. No, not the one with Michael Keaton. We're talking about Jack Frost, the killer snowman. I'm just trying to see other things we've done. Recently, we've done Reservoir Dogs. That was a suggestion from one of our Patreon. We would have gotten it around to it, but on our Patreon, if you are a executive producer and content creator, you get to suggest episodes that we do. We did Reservoir Dogs for one of our Patreon, Jay. We did Cruel Intentions. I believe that's, what, 97, something like that. We reviewed Pearl Jam 10 on one of our live episodes. We recently did Dick Tracy on episode 234, our double Halloween episode. Every Halloween, we do two Halloween episodes, a double episode, just like Christmas. And every year, we move on in the Halloween series, and we just did Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. So that's what you can expect here from the Midnight Jury. Like I said, tons of pop culture movies, and you have like 200 episodes to choose from. Some are not available on WLWstudios.com. We call those our classic episodes that are in the Midnight Jury Vault. It's about the first 70 episodes, 75 episodes, somewhere in there. And you know what? Every now and then, periodically, when we can't get to you guys, we re-release something from the Midnight Jury Vault that hasn't been around in 4 years, 5 years, three or four years, and we pull out a classic episode and we re-release it so that eventually everything that we've ever done will be available at WLWstudios.com. Now today, our special guest, you may know him as Scott Farkas from Christmas Story. He was in Freddy vs. Jason, the 2003 a film that finally brought those two monsters of horror together, Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees. What else is he in? He was in, I have it written down over here. He was in Transformers. He had a role in Transformers. He had a role in Almost Famous. He was in, what's the movie, Wild America with the JTT? I mean, come on, this guy has been in so many things, and his, I'll get to the television, I'll throw out a bunch of TV shows that he's done, which that list is also ridiculously long. His name is Zach Ward, and I am very excited to have him on the Midnight Jury, and as soon as we get back from our first ad break, he will be joining me, and we will be talking about Christmas Story. We'll be talking about Freddy versus Jason, and there's one show in particular that he's done that you all know I love that I'm going to talk to him about, but we'll get to that after the break. Before I hit this ad break, before I hit our TV show theme of the week, let me reach down here. Hold on 1 second. I got our Patreon people that I want to thank. If you can help us out, if you like what you hear, we've been doing this show for almost 6 years in March. It'll be our 6-year anniversary. And we have been doing this for 6 years for free for you. Every Friday night on WLWstudios.com or on Rant EM Radio, every second Saturday of the month, we go live. You can call in. If you want to write this number down, our studio number, 215-688-5741. Give us a call sometime and let us know. Get in the debate, get in the discussion, and help us come up with our final verdicts for the movies. But our Patreon, we really appreciate it. Go over to patreon.com/midnightjury. You have no idea how much that helps us out. We have a $3 option, a $5 option, and the $8 option. You are an executive producer / content creator, and you will get your name mentioned on every show. You will get special, with all of them, you'll get bonus episodes of the Midnight Jury available exclusively to Patreon supporters. And you'll get my solo show, The Midnight Mike Show, where I legitimately, it's like a Midnight Mike theater, basically. I put on a movie, and me and my co-host, Amy England, or a co-host that I bring in, we'll watch a movie front to back. You'll hear it. You can hear us commentate. It's just like DVD commentary on a film. And if you put that film on, hit mute and push play with us. When I say 1, 2, 3, play, you're just going to watch the movie and hear us, and you'll be able to hear the film and everything. It's a real fun time, and it's the show's in its infancy, but in 2019, we're really going to get on board with that. I'm hoping to get out at least 12 shows, one a month, maybe. You know, it's hard, you know, with doing the Midnight Jury and also running WLW Studios. It's a lot of work, but we really appreciate all of our Patreon supporters. Without them, we could not do it. So we have our producers, Ricky and Anthony. We have our supporter, Eric, and our executive producers, Baza, Donnie, Jay, JP, Michael, Joe, and Kathy. We thank you guys so much, because not only do you help fund the Midnight Jury and all the stuff that with the website and the phone number and the SoundCloud for the Patreon and all this other stuff we pay for, but you're helping us build our new state-of-the-art studios, which right now we're in the holding area studios at the Midnight Jury compound. We're building a studio where you're going to eventually be able to see us do every episode. You're going to be able to see us on video doing the episodes. We're going to have green screen. We're going to have special YouTube. We're finally going to bring up our YouTube page, which we always neglect, which you can find us on YouTube if you want. Just search Midnight Jury and you'll see a few videos of our intros and our shows. But we're going to start taking it a lot more seriously once we get into this new studio and we have the equipment and the cameras and the green screens and all of that stuff. And you guys on Patreon, truly, we could not do it without you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into this. Let's get to our ad break. But first, we have to hit our TV show theme of the week. I want to remind everybody that you can follow myself, the other hosts of the show, Cal and Adam. You can follow all of us on Twitter at Midnight Jury, or you can follow my solo show. It's at Midnight Mike Show. But that, because it's a little, I like the old kitschy ways of spelling, like Starlight Diner and things like that. It's spelled MIDNITE Mike Show. So you can please give us a follow at Midnight Jury or at Midnight Mike Show. We really appreciate it. But our TV show theme of the week, here's a show that I don't think I'm going to talk too much about this, but you know, we love TV show themes of the week from the 80s and 90s, and this is a great one. Zach Ward did an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. So, ladies and gentlemen, after this ad break, I will be joined by Zach on the line here at WLW Studios. I'm so excited. The Midnight Jury. Here's our TV show theme of the week, Walker, Texas Ranger.
The unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right. 'Cause the eyes of the ranger are upon you. Any wrong you do, he's gonna see. When you're in Texas, look behind you. 'Cause that's where the ranger's gonna be.
Hey, this is Sean Whalen from Never Been Kissed, Twister, People Under the Stairs, That Thing You Do.
This is Ari Lehman in the first Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
This is Mitchell Mussolino. I play Sam in the horror film The Barn.
This is Deborah Voorhees from Friday the 13th, Part 5.
Hey, this is Buff Bagwell, and you're listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to Midnight Jury.
And you're listening to The Midnight Jury. Jason never dies.
Fuck Daddy, listen to it.
Hey, it's Mike. First, we want to thank everyone who has downloaded or streamed this show through TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Player FM, or our home at WLW Studios. You, our listeners, are extremely important to us, and you can help us out without even spending a dime by making sure you download from our website, WLWstudios.com, follow us on Twitter, at Midnight Jury, and give us a like on Facebook. The little things you do, such as retweeting, sharing, liking, and favoriting, is what helps keep our show alive and helps push our newest movements, including hashtag Jury or Die and hashtag Fight Censorship. Freedom of speech should never be censored from anyone, and corporate media has done their best to silence us, but you, the listeners, have helped so much in that fight. Once again, we want to extend our deepest appreciation to everyone who took the time to find us, and we hope you continue to enjoy the show.
What's up, everybody? This is Handsome Dan Lopez, the smartest man not in professional wrestling, and host of Handsome Dan's Final Say, which is officially back on WLWstudios.com, as well as the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. We premiere new series and specials on Tuesdays, so follow me on Twitter at Dan's Final Say or Facebook.com/Dan's Final Say to make sure that you don't miss a single episode. Raise your wrestling IQ.
Broadcasting outside the city that never sleeps, this is WLWstudios.com, New York City.
Back on the Midnight Jury, WLWstudios.com. Of course, also the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and Player FM. I am here with our guest this evening, Zach Ward. Zach, how you doing today?
I'm good. I feel like I'm coming into a wrestling ring. Zach Ward, hey!
I'm going to break you, brother. I'm going to break you in hell.
I did do a little bit of work in wrestling, and I was a ringside commentator, so that's why that...
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I didn't even give you the full... I was going to actually go through some of your stuff, but I wanted the audience to know that, like, your IMDb, your Wikipedia, your filmography is just so long that I wouldn't have been able to list it all in an announcement kind of way, you know?
Well, thank you. I'm honored, touched, and smiling. Thank you.
So but for anyone listening, I am going to run down a few things, and then there's a few things that you've done that I do want to talk about. Obviously, you are, I'd say, your biggest role. Would you say you're most known for playing Scott Farkas in A Christmas Story, or would you say there's something else? What do you think someone else, what would somebody come up to you and say, I know you from, what would it be?
It's usually Christmas Story or Titus or Resident Evil Apocalypse, Almost Famous. Wow, but Christmas Story is always the top of the pops.
Yeah, it is. And you're not one of those. There's some celebrities out there who will take things that they've done in their past and, you know, back off from it. But I've noticed that even on your Twitter account, right there, it says Scott Farkas. Boom, right there.
Yeah. It says I'm a child actor turned adult child, and yes, I am Scott Farkas.
All right, so let me just run this down for our listeners. I mean, these are ones that I noticed, but anyone could go to your IMDb or Wikipedia and see how long this list is, but we're 80s and 90s, so I'm immediately going to end horror. So you did an episode of Friday the 13th, the series. If anyone's interested,
yeah.
That episode was called Vanity's Mirror. You did two episodes of NYPD Blue, Party of Five, Charmed, Deadwood, Lost, NCIS, CSI, CSI Miami, CSI New York, Mike and Molly, and of course, something that I want to talk to you about, one of our favorite shows, because this show was born in Philadelphia. You did an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where you played Cricket's brother, Davey.
Yeah. Now, that was fun.
Let me start off with that, because like I said, we were originally born in Philadelphia. We spent 5 years broadcasting right from the Center City, Philadelphia. And this show, you know, I always used to see them filming on location. I know they did the on locations on the streets of Philadelphia, and then a lot of the rest of the filming was done back in California, interior shots.
Yeah.
Where were you? Were you in Philadelphia?
No, I was always in L.A. For this. Like, I'm originally from Toronto, Canada. Just to clarify, I'm a Canadian and an American, dual citizen, so I'm only stealing my own job. And no, but on this project, I only shot in Los Angeles. And they make it look like Philadelphia, but it's not.
Yeah, I'll tell you, as like I said, I lived there for 11 years. And when there was one shot when you guys were outside, and I think it's actually when Cricket is kissing the dog, and they panned to you and the actor playing your father, and behind you, I could have sworn that was Philadelphia, because Philadelphia is known for its murals, and behind you guys, there was a mural on a building, and I said, wow, where is that? Like, I was trying to figure out what street that was, and I guess...
That was downtown Los Angeles, and yeah, certain areas in downtown LA have a bunch of graffitis on walls. So yeah, that's kind of cool that you identify with that with Philly, but no, that was LA, brother.
Well, I'll tell you, if they could fool someone who lived in Philadelphia for 11 years, then they're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, they're pretty damn funny.
Now, was working with, I know you worked with David Hornsby, who played Cricket. How enjoyable was that? What was he like?
You know what I did not know before I did it is that he's one of the writers. I didn't know that.
Well, I know there's definitely two members of the cast, but Glenn and I know Charlie. But I know he spent some time writing. How much does he actually write of the show? Is he involved in every episode?
He writes on every episode, and then he gets certain episodes that are just his that he wrote. Like, he gets his name on the front of it. The way a writer's room works, on a series, and I learned this from doing Titus. So most people would know this. If you and I were, it's you and me and four other dudes, and you and I created a new show called My Morning Coffee. I don't know. And you and I created the show My Morning Coffee, and we came up with a pilot. It got picked up, and now we're in the writer's room breaking the story on the next 13 episodes, and we're in the writer's room with these 4 to 7, 10 other people. People are all pitching jokes and lines, but certain people have the allocation of doing the actual job. And at the end of it, it would be, so it's going to be my name. This script, episode season 1, episode 2, is written by Zach Ward. The second one is season 1, episode 3, written by you. And then we might put somebody else's name on it who came up with the full idea. But it's a team effort, and it's based upon seniority and contribution. So you look at the guy who played Rickety Cricket, and he actually – that was his whole episode that he came up with, and he's been a writer on that show for years now, which is really cool that they brought him up that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I was not aware of that. So pretty much, no matter who on a comedy, let's say, is writing an episode, I know there's always people involved in writing, but you're talking about usually a team of how many people, you think?
Well, on their show, I think it's a pretty small team. I think it's under 6. On bigger shows, but that's the thing. Bigger shows, when I say bigger, I mean, you know, you look at a show like, Veep, right? Veep on HBO.
Yeah, the one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That probably has a writer's room of 14 people.
Okay. Okay.
Because you got to understand, like, what you're looking at on the television, and you see the pretty pictures and the people talking, and then that's great. But the work to get it built, to get it done, built up and created before anybody turns the camera on is a lot. It's a lot of work, man.
You
just have to have a lot of, like, especially when you have very quick turnarounds on episodes, once you start rock and rolling, you have to be delivering the goods. So they put a lot of monkeys on task.
Now, do you think that's a like having a large writing staff is a benefit to a show? Because in my opinion, having something to do with the wrestling industry, I think that the pro wrestling was written the best at the smallest possible team of 2 to 3 writers. Because nowadays there's like a team of 20 writers in WWE. And in my opinion, it's not watchable.
Well, I mean, here's the difference is like, if you're talking about wrestling being written by a couple of people who went out into the ring and did it for the audience, that was in the audience, but not on television.
No, well, I'm talking about the WWE has like writers who write all the backstage stuff, all the storylines between the wrestlers. You never really see them ever. You'll never see them on camera. It's just like writing for a television show. Like the two of their main writers actually worked on television shows. So what I'm saying is, do you think it'd be beneficial? Like if you were going to write a television show, would you rather have a small team of, let's say, 2 to 6, or would you rather have a large team? Because I just feel like a large team when there's so much coming at you.
I think you're right. I think it's also this, it all depends upon the people in your team. Like I've written in the last 4.5 years, I've written 10 movies, 7 of them have been made, and I've written a TV series and it's been shot. So I've done a lot of writing and I've worked with other people to write, and it makes me incredibly nervous because you don't know how you're going to get along with somebody. And I love my wife. We get along very well. And just like a marriage, it takes a while to establish the way that you communicate.
Yeah.
And as a writer, the difference is you need to get that communication and that system locked in now. Otherwise, things aren't going to work. And it's certain things come down to, what do you find funny? What makes you laugh? Like I'm making sure that I don't swear on your podcast. I don't want to.
You can say whatever you want. You can say whatever you want.
But here's the thing is I'm a pretty well read individual, and I'm also pretty crass, and I'm pretty direct, and it can offend and upset people, and I don't care.
Yep.
I really don't. I prefer integrity and honesty, and let's be blunt, in scientific methodology, Socratic methodology, what works is what works, not what my ego says. So that's my attitude. But here, you know, when you're working with a bunch of other people who may not be your friends, who are people that you hire, you have to be very, very considerate to what is the political nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Everybody's entitled to an opinion. That joke you said, that offended me as a person of gender, as a person of color, as a person of religion. So what you said upset me to the point that I can't work with you. And you remember when you're dealing with sitcoms that are doing like $2 to $3 million budget per episode, you're dealing with big studios who have a lot of H&R, and everybody's entitled to have an opinion. When you're dealing with independent feature films, you're rocking and rolling. You're pirates in the Caribbean. You're on your ship and you're getting stuff done. So when I'm going off on a tangent, I apologize, but writing with people is a very hard relationship. The tighter it is, the faster it could work. I understand and agree with you 100%. I've never run a writer's room. I've only worked with one or two other people at one time. So the idea of 10 people would make me very nervous, especially in today's politically correct climate, where you have to watch your P's and Q's. And I'm not somebody who watches his P's and Q's.
Yeah, me personally, I'm the kind of person who would want to work with people who would let me or my team basically say or do what we want. Because, and I understand the politically correct world, and I understand that if NBC is paying, you have to answer to NBC if they're paying for you to put on a show on NBC. And I get that. But that's why I appreciate, I guess somehow, for instance, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, they have, I guess FX either lets them do what they want, or because they just go to offend and they don't seem to care anything about political correctness, which is why I love the show so much.
Right? It's just genius. I think, have you ever seen their pilot?
Oh, yeah, no, of It's Always Sunny. I've seen every episode. I've gone through that series a few times.
Okay, well, the pilot that they shot on camcorders in their house.
Oh, that one. The one that came before, like, the Charlie Has Cancer episode.
Yeah. No, well, that was the pilot was that Charlie Had Cancer. But it was these guys shooting it on camcorders in their crappy apartment in North Hollywood, and the footage is garbage, but the comedy timing is brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Those guys are just they lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I agree.
They were that funny, that good, and that original, that painfully honest. It just, that episode, you know, oh, I've got cancer. Oh, if you ever want to talk about it, oh, thanks. I feel really, oh, wait, you want to talk about it now? Yeah, but I have my coffee.
Yeah.
It's getting cold. I mean, it's just the darkest. Oh, no, I get it. You want to get back to your coffee. Like, just the darkest material ever and hilarious.
And
I love them.
And I hope for your sake, I like the fact that you got a role where you're related to one of the main reoccurring characters, because if they asked you to come back, would you come back?
Oh my God, of course I would.
Absolutely. That's cool. And you know, you have more of an in because you're related to the character of Rickety Cricket.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I read the breakdown, for the character, Rickety Cricket's brother, I was like, dude, I got this job. This is going to be mine. Because I know all the other actors in LA who have red hair and could kind of fit the shoes, and they weren't right for it. And I also know the comedy styling. And I was like, okay, this is perfect. And I knew I was going to nail it. Went into the room, casting director is a friend of mine. And it was out of the park easy. I was the right guy for the job from the get-go. But on the flip side, I highly doubt that they're going to bring Rickety Cricket's brother back, just because life is like that. So I just moved forward, and I'm grateful I got to be part of a fantastic comedy troupe.
Definitely. Last question, and I think you kind of answered it because you're talking about the pilot and all of that, but were you a fan of the show before you got the role?
Yes. Yeah.
Terrific. Terrific. That's awesome. I like to know things like that because I think it shows. I think it shows when you go and you perform and you being a fan prior to being on the show, I feel like that'll just help your performance of knowing who Rickety Cricket was and his background as opposed to just reading a script and going and doing it.
Could you imagine reading a script of Always Sunny in Philadelphia? How dark and mean that would be if you had never watched a show.
Oh,
and going in for that show, how bizarre that would be.
And how many callback jokes they use. You'd be reading it, and I feel like half the stuff you wouldn't get because you'd have to know the previous source material.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel sorry for anybody. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so what we're going to do is move on. I want to talk to you a little bit about Christmas Story, and then I have to talk to you a little bit about, since this is a horror podcast also, Freddy versus Jason.
Oh, good.
Christmas Story, the first one, I'm sure you've heard before. I just have to know if you saved the coonskin cap or any other prop from the film.
No.
No. That hurt.
Nothing was saved.
That hurts.
I mean, the original coonskin hat is actually in a museum in Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it in the, I know the original house is set up to be some sort of museum. Is that where it's at, or is it somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
That's where.
No, you're right on the money.
Wow.
It's right there.
That I every year, someone on my Facebook or Twitter or Instagram ends up going to that house. And every year I say, next year or the year after, I have to figure out a way to get out there. And it just never comes to fruition.
Well, if you go out this, I mean, gosh, that's many months from now, but if you go out there this coming December, call me and I'll walk you through some of the house.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would definitely take you up on that if I could find a way to get out there. All right, so let's see here. So I'm assuming that there's someone in that cast that you're still close to or still talk to. Who from that cast would you say you're the closest to still today?
Yano Anaya.
And played?
Yano Anaya played Grover Dill. I talked to Scotty Schwartz on a semi-regular basis. He played Flick, and I talked to Yano. He played Grover Dill. I've known him for years.
Have you guys ever been approached? Have you seen how I think it's just Entertainment or one of these magazines or TV? They always take all these movies from, like, whether it's the 80s or 90s, and they get the cast back together for a reunion and do like a photo shoot and release it. They did it with Hook, and they did it with Married with Children, and they did it with all these different films. Have you guys ever been approached for something like that?
We've done stuff like that every once in a while. You know, now it's been like, gosh, man, the movie's 35 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm sure in five more years, they'll be like, where are they now? Where are the kids from the Christmas Story? Yeah.
Well, hey, at least you could say people should. Well, first off, there's a lot of people who do movies, you know, one-off movies, and then there's nothing past that. You have a plethora of work that you could say, hey, I've been working the whole time, you know? So that, I think that's a cool thing.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the fact that you use the term plethora because it reminds me of Three Amigos. And would you say I have a plethora of sweaters? Tio Apo. Do you know what the plethora is? No.
I don't even know if that's where I ended up getting that word from. I gotta figure out where I. There's certain words that people use, preposterous, you know, things like that, where right. You hear it somewhere, and then you end up using it.
I thought his was like inconceivable. I don't think this word means what you think it means.
Yeah. let's see. Do you have? And I know you've done radio shows and podcasts and this, that, and the other thing. Is there any story you can give us from the set of Christmas Story that maybe you've only told once or twice, something that sticks out to you as funny or interesting that maybe you haven't told like a million times? If you can't,
we were shooting in Cleveland. When we were shooting in Cleveland, what's really interesting about it is that Cleveland, Cleveland, Ohio, in 1983, the downtown area looked like it was in a war zone. It was, the city had gone through a massive bankruptcy. Buildings were closed. Homeless people were everywhere. It was really sad. It was really heart-wrenchingly sad, to the point that where the hotel that we were staying in, there weren't that many floors that were open. So there were floors that were like just covered in plywood. You couldn't even open the elevator doors to get out there. Sometimes we broke into those floors and ran around and played tag. We were not allowed to, we were children. We were not allowed to go walk up and down the street. You couldn't. You physically couldn't. There were so many homeless people on the street, garbage bins on fire because it was cold, people struggling to survive. And it was really sad. And we would go from the lobby of the hotel. And it was this grand old hotel that used to be beautiful and gorgeous. And now it looked like it was something after World War II. From the lobby, there was an access to the train station that was terrifying. I mean, it looked like something out of a New York horror film. And we would go over there, and there was one little deli where we could play video games. And that was our... it was like two games. I think it was like Miss Pac-Man and Defender or something. And that was what we could do. And it was very interesting to be that young, 13 years old, and still be so aware of the poverty and so aware of the sadness that was surrounding us that it was intimidating. And then the amazing thing is years later, watching what's happened to Cleveland, its comeback, its phoenix-like rise from the ashes to become this beautiful city. And, you know, I'm 49 years old, and in my life I've gotten to see my hometown of Toronto change massively. But you don't get to see a lot of places change in your lifetime because things usually move pretty slowly. But I've gotten the opportunity to have a relationship with Cleveland, Ohio, where part of me always feels really proud of them. And a lot of respect for how that city brought itself back from the edge, and a lot of pride in what they've done with that town and how beautiful it is. So that was something that was, you know, I think it worked for the movie because the movie takes place in 1941, 1943, kind of Depression era mentality. You know, in Christmas Story, they're constantly eating meatloaf and red cabbage because they can't afford anything else. They can't buy a brand new a furnace. They have to keep on fixing that one and saying razzum, frazzum, blah, blah, blah. They're tying stuff to, they're haggling over the price of the pine, the Christmas tree. The tires have no tread on them because he can't afford new ones. It's like everybody's just eking it by. And Cleveland, Ohio was eking by. And I think the parallels really helped drive a sense of teamwork. You know, people are very, very honest when they're broke and they're hungry. Yeah. And the film feels that way. That's why I think A Christmas Story really locks into people because it has that sensibility, because it feels like we're struggling together to try and make something work.
Yeah. And I think it speaks so much to how bad the shape the city was in, that even you guys as kids noticed it. Like, you know, a lot of cities have poverty and have, you know, whatever, but the fact that you guys as kids, it was that noticeable to you, really shows what kind of decline the city was in at the time. And like you said, it's a good thing that it has come back.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
Now, I have to ask you, what there's been two things that have come out since Christmas Story and that have been related back to Christmas Story. And I want to get your thoughts as an original cast member, because as we all know, when it comes to any movie anywhere, nothing's going to beat the original. But yeah, there was a Christmas Story Part 2. did you see it?
I did not see it. And
you didn't miss anything.
That one was done in 2012. And I have no animosity towards anybody involved in it. The actors, I feel like they really took on, an albatross.
Yes.
Because no matter what you do, you're messing with perfection. And I don't say perfection because I'm in it, but everything about Christmas Story just came together perfectly.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to repeat that process, but you're trying to marketize what was magical in the first one, which was a lot of honesty. And you're doing it cheesy. And even in the commercials that I saw, I was like, gee whiz, I sure hope I can get myself a car. Oh boy.
Yeah.
It seemed like a bad Rick and Morty knockoff. Like it was just dumb. And people hated it. I felt very sorry for the actors who got lambasted because they were attached to the project. And then, okay. So that one I never saw. People hated it. And I feel sorry for the actors. Next one. Which one are you talking about?
Well, I was going to say about the only thing that bothered me about that really stuck out to me about the problems that were involved in Christmas Story 2 was the fact that the character of Ralphie is now like 16, somewhere in that age, and he's still having these crazy fantasy flashbacks, but only a little kid would have these flashbacks. So when he's doing the fantasies with Black Bart or whatever, it makes sense because he's a kid. When you're 16, you're not really thinking about that. Your fantasies involve, I want to maybe play for the National Football League, or I want to go on a date with this girl.
Right. But see, that's the problem. Legally, they could only use Ralphie at a certain age. There was some type of intellectual property rights agreement between the estate and Warner Brothers, and they had some sort of regulation, and it was either 16 and above or 16 and below. I can't remember which it was, but they had to do that. And then the problem is they were trying to cookie cutter re-engineer something.
Yeah.
And remember, the original writer, Gene Shepard, that was an amalgamation of stories written over like 30 years then.
Yeah.
So, and when it was put together, him and Bob Clark were constantly arguing over the script. And that movie works. Christmas Story works. When they did Christmas Story 2, they were trying to re-engineer what worked from the first one with no freaking soul. Like, hey, remember that moment where you had flashbacks? Wasn't that cool? Yeah, yeah, you should do some more of those.
Yes.
Cool, I'll do that.
Yep.
Right?
Like, exactly. Like,
remember in Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, love the first one, it's fantastic. And Johnny Depp is doing his, like, hello, how are you? I'm drunk and I'm crazy. And he's waddling around. In the second one, it was as if the Disney executives turned around and said, by the way, we market tested the movie. People like it when you're drunk and you're waddling. Do a lot more of that. So every freaking line he has is the exact same delivery to pander to that audience expectation. And therefore, it becomes annoying.
Yeah, it's almost like you're playing. They come to you and say, like when they came, because I like the first one too. After that, I'm not a huge fan of the Pirates series.
No, right?
But it's
the first
like
one, like that's amazing.
I used to actually, I went and I bought the first three because I hadn't seen any, and me and my wife are huge Disney fans, and I hadn't seen them.
Yeah.
So I bought the first three, and this was back when you could still go to like FYE or whatever and return for like store credit. I after watching the three, I brought the second and the third back and just got the store credit and ended up getting something else. But I kept the first one.
Right.
But it's like you said,
my point is, yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
it's like they're trying to cookie cut what they thought worked with no soul behind it. And therefore it feels hollow, shallow.
Yes.
Empty, pandering, insultingly disingenuous. And we as human beings have spent our lives analyzing facial expressions, and we know when something feels off. And we go, that's off.
Yeah, or when someone's trying to play something as opposed to just letting it come naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, and then finally, the last thing I have on Christmas Story is, what were your thoughts on the live musical?
Oh, my God, what a turd.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
Oh, what a turd.
Oh, it was so disappointing.
Oh, my God, it was pathetically gross. So the thing is, I've actually seen when they first did the Christmas Story musical in Kansas City before it went to Broadway, I went and I saw it there. And it was effing amazing, man. Like, I sat in that audience, and the way it starts off is beautiful. It's got the big red curtain behind on the stage, and there's a small desk and with a big old-style 1930s microphone on it, and a man walks out and sits down, and he's basically the narrator. He's Gene Shepard.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Gene Shepard was on the radio all the time, so he's got this incredible voice. And so the man sits down, leans in, and starts talking. And you're in a dark room in the theater, and it's beautiful, and it's quiet, and his voice and the music, and it builds up. And then as the curtains split, the entire desk and the man slide slowly off of stage or pulled out of the way. So you're left with the stage and the different sets and the characters, but it feels like a world that you're in. Even when they're doing a musical, it's you're in it.
Yeah.
And it makes you cry. It makes you laugh. What in the name of fuck do they do with this thing? They opened up with a Katy Perry song. What the fuck, man? What is your problem? How is that this movie? Like, it's as if, again, just like the Christmas Story 2, they were trying to accommodate studio notes to suck up to everybody and create nothing. So you open with a Katy Perry song because some studio executive is like, well, you know what the kids like nowadays? They like that Katy Perry. You know, my daughter, she just got bar mitzvahed, and she actually likes the Katy Perry. Yeah, let's do that, see? Yep. It was horrible.
And I felt like, because I saw basically, I saw you know, what would I guess be considered a bootleg filming of that musical, and I couldn't watch it. And then this, and then the same thing with the Matthew Broderick one, the live,
and that kid, the freaking kid, the Ralphie. I wanted to punch him in the teeth. He was so obnoxiously Disney/Nickelodeon, like, hey, everybody, I'm adorable. I'm going to say words now. I wanted him to die. And then the kid who played Scott Farkas was gorgeous. He was like an Abercrombie and Fitch, Fitch model. It was ridiculous.
And
I mean, I was 13 years old. I had a big schnoz. I had a big nose because I was going through ugly growth spurts. And I had braces and jacked up teeth. I was a real kid. This kid looked like he was came out of a test tube from like some Ubermensch human engineering from the Third Reich. I was like, no, that's not, no, let make kids look like kids, not like your Nickelodeon douchebag Disney kids. Let's make them look like real children, please.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was just a travesty. The whole thing was just
the shoehorning in of, well, first off, Matthew Broderick, I like him in a lot of things, but in this, his narration was so bad. It seemed like he didn't have any investment in the character of the narrator. I watched a video on YouTube. I forget which one it was, but a guy was comparing the original Gene Shepard narration with Matthew Broderick's and like playing them back to back. And I felt embarrassed for Matthew Broderick with how this guy was pointing it out. And then the same thing with the shoehorning in of the politically correct. Let's have a whole thing on Hanukkah. What?
Oh my God.
Like, why?
Why?
There was no reason for it.
No, it was ridiculous.
All right.
It was ridiculous. I thought what's her face who played the mom?
Maya Rudolph?
Yeah, I thought she did a good job. I thought she felt momish. But, yeah, bringing in other religions and other stuff, seriously, fuck off. It's called A Christmas Story. If you're that offended by someone having a Christmas Story movie, don't watch it. Go do something else. Just because you don't like something doesn't mean I need to change it.
And do you,
this is the real world.
Do you think they should
have? And then the guy who played Maya Rudolph's husband, dude, I've never seen less chemistry in my life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that guy, I don't know. Here's the feeling I got was that guy does not like women, and he really hated Maya Rudolph. That was a feeling I got.
Like he just had some deep-seated hatred for her before they got on set.
Mm-hmm.
And it came off. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about the cutting out of the Chinese singing?
Oh, from the live performance?
Yeah, the live TV musical.
I think, look, that's their right to do what they want because it's a musical, fine. But revisionist history doesn't help anybody not repeat it. And you wanna pretend that in 1941, that Chinese people were not running restaurants, were not doing everything they could for their customers. You know, in New York City, every Jew on Christmas Eve goes out for Chinese food.
Yep.
It happens in Toronto as well. It's not racist. It's the fact that Jewish people don't celebrate Christmas and Chinese restaurants are open.
Yep.
Okay. So stop being so goddamn precious. Grow a sack of balls. Be an adult and admit to reality. And also, you know, one of my producers, his wife is from Taiwan. She speaks Mandarin. And English. And her English is not great. It's much better than my Mandarin is because I can't speak it at all. But point is, she still has an accent. That's not racist. That's how she talks.
Yeah, it's reality.
That's actually how she talks, man.
I mean, it'd be just the same as if any of us went to any other country and learned their language, we'd have an American accent that went along with it. And it wouldn't be racist of them to point that out.
No.
So, yeah, and you know what? I think that's one of the funniest spots in the movie, but I will say this. They could have just cut it out. They could have just ignored it because I knew they were going to go PC on it. I knew they weren't going to include it, but the way they did it where Matthew Broderick was like, "Oh, I know what you expected." I thought that was a little clever at least. where they kind of...
I honestly don't remember that. I was seeing... I had to watch it in a theater. It was a fundraiser. For... I think it was a fundraiser. My wife's here. Sweetheart, remember that horrible thing that we saw in Toronto with my mom, the live performance? That was in a theater, right? What was that a fundraiser for? Toys for Tots?
Yeah, you guys were just making that.
So a choice for tosses, yeah. So I had to watch that surrounded by a bunch of other people, and I was constantly stepping outside to get away from it. So I don't remember that moment.
Oh yeah, they kind of played a thing for it, but I mean, even me, halfway through, I was pretty much checked out, and my wife had left the room and was like, "I'm just going to go make some dinner or something. Like, I'm done with this." That's what ended up happening. All right, I don't want to keep you too long, so let me just quickly move on to Freddy versus Jason, and then I have a real quick one word answer lightning round. You played Bobby Davis in Freddy versus Jason. You were the brother of one of the main characters of the film, the character of your brother was stuck in one of the mental facilities, and he was being pumped full of, as a super horror fan, I can't believe I don't remember the name of the drug, Hypnosil. There it is. And the scene, the scene I remember specifically you in was the bathtub scene. Now, are we talking with the slit wrists? Are we talking digital or practical?
Practical.
That's all amazing. Practical. I'm so happy to hear that. Because I'm very much against digital effects unless they're absolutely needed. And I feel like a lot of films today just are, let's just, digital hell, a digital tiger, a digital rain, digital everything.
Yeah.
That really takes me out of the film. And I guess maybe kids of today or millennials, maybe wouldn't notice because they've been brought up in all that digital stuff. But for someone who grew up in the 80s, for me, in the 90s, let's say, with all the practical effects and you see really good ones, I'm glad to hear that. Those were practical. So how long did it take to get that makeup put on, or at least the applications put on you?
This slit wrist application took about 4 hours.
Wow.
And then it had tubes running through the back of the wall. So that they could pump the blood out.
And how long did you actually, in filming, have to sit in that bath of blood?
Like half a day.
A half a day?
Yeah, a half a day.
A half a day of filming? Like, how many hours do you think that is?
I probably spent about 3 hours sitting in that bathtub full of blood, and I was literally, I looked hot pink for about a week and a half.
Well, as a horror fan, I think you should be honored because I know in that scene, your body, I guess, as the character, is taken over by Freddy. So I guess Freddy's voice comes out of you. So in a way, you kind of played Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty awesome.
That is
awesome. It's pretty exciting. Yeah, I'm one of those lucky few. And then they did another application I had was on my forearm, my right forearm. Where I'm walking towards my little brother, I'm like, "Oh, that's right. They all forgot." And my hands turning and pus and bubbles and smoke are coming off my forearm. And that was another maybe 2.5 hour application.
Wow.
And then they were blowing smoke through these long tubes to go up into my arm and pus and all this stuff. But they had to walk right behind me as the camera was to my right on a dolly. We were dollying forward towards Brendan, the guy who plays my younger brother, and my arms in front. And I'm still wearing basically no pants, basically just a cock sock. That's what we call it in the business. And I have three practical effects people on their knees behind me shuffling forward in order to try, as they're blowing smoke and pushing plungers on pus and so forth, to make it go in my arm. So I literally have three people up my butt while I'm doing that scene. It was so funny, dude.
That must have been uncomfortable for you and them.
stuff like that, you got to have a sense of humor about, because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, if that movie had been made, let's say today, it would have all been digital effects. There would have been none of that practical application. So I definitely, in 2000, I guess it was 2003, I guess I really appreciate that was right on the cusp before they went pretty much doing digital everything. Now, were you a horror fan at all before you did Freddy versus Jason?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good to hear.
Of course.
Good to hear. And and who were you more of a fan of going into the film, Freddy or Jason?
Always Freddy. Freddy was always my guy.
And do you think, as someone in the film, who won, after seeing the film, who won, Freddy or Jason?
To me, Freddy wins. To me, Freddy always wins. Freddy's just the right character. He lives in your dreams, so he's more of a spirit than a physical. I mean, so that means that, like, you can erase the hardware, but the software keeps on, is infectious.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people in the horror community, I'm actually a Jason fan. I love Freddy, but I'm a Michael Myers fan, if you really want to get down to brass tacks. But in the film, I always said, you know, well, Jason is the one who kills everybody, this, that, and the other thing. But then people point out in the end of the movie, it's almost as if Freddy is controlling Jason. When they come out of the lake. So I give that credit too. And I think, you know, now as we've gotten many years later, I think I kind of agree with you that in the end, Freddy probably did win. So, all right.
Okay.
My last thing is I have a quick lightning round. It's very simple. I'm going to ask you two things. All you need to do. Before that, quick, name a movie or TV show today that you haven't worked on that you'd like to work on.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Wow, my wife got me into that. I thought that was a great show. I didn't see. Did season two drop yet?
Yeah.
Oh, when she gets home, I'm going to have to tell her. Maybe we'll watch some episodes tonight. name a movie or TV show from the past that you wish you could have worked on.
Highlander.
Huh, I have not seen enough of Highlander to know.
You didn't watch the movie Highlander and you claim to be an 80s guy?
Hey.
Oh.
Hey, whoa.
Friend, how dare you?
Well, maybe we'll review it very soon, specifically because you brought it up.
Well, it is a great movie, and at the end, meh. But in the beginning, it is, there can be only one.
I will definitely check it out. If it's recommended by you, I will definitely check it out. Okay, now's the one-word answers, and then we're done. Give you two options. First one's easy, Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Breakfast Club or Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Breakfast Club.
Pearl Jam or Nirvana?
Nirvana.
A roller rink or the mall?
Roller rink.
And finally, Nintendo or Sega?
Nintendo.
Nice. Zach, thank you so much for being on the show. Like I said, I don't want to take up tons of your time. Maybe you can have you on some other time to talk about some more things you've worked on. But I really appreciate this. It was awesome to have you on the Midnight Jury.
Well, my pleasure, man. I appreciate it. So if anybody wants to reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram, my handle is @ Total Zach Ward, TotalZackWard. And so that's the same for Instagram and Twitter. And on Facebook, basically, I think it's my name, and it's the one of me holding my nephew, a little baby. So if they want to say hi, I'm really good at responding directly and saying howdy. That's how you and I met.
Absolutely, and I appreciate it very much. Zach, do me a favor. Stay on the line as we go into this break. I just want to talk to you real quick. Everyone, check out Zach @ Total Zach Ward, like he said, on Twitter. And you can follow myself and my co-hosts, Adam and Cal, on Twitter @ Midnight Jury. Or follow me on my solo show, @ Midnight Mike Show. We will be right back after this ad break.
Walk online. Yeah. Gale from Child's Play, Child's Play 2, Bride of Chucky.
This is Scotty Riggs.
Hi, I'm Paige. I am the creator and director of Fredheads, the documentary.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Todd Moorhead, and I'm the star of Fredheads.
Hey, this is the innovator of Tommy Dreamer. You're listening to The Midnight Jury.
The Midnight Jury.
You're listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you're listening to The Midnight Jury Podcast.
I get this feeling.
Hey, what's up? It's Mike again. I know you are a diehard Midnight Jury fan. I know that because you've gotten through most of our episode and made it to our final ad break this week. You are our most important listeners, and we appreciate everything you do for us. That's why we need you to help us fight against censorship and make sure you like, retweet, and share our stuff on Twitter and Facebook at Midnight Jury. Our free speech has been threatened. We've been censored on iTunes and kicked off of previous networks, and we will always have the last laugh. If you tell five friends and they tell five friends, we can take over the globe. It's up to you, our most diehard jury listeners. Please continue your loyal support, and we will continue to say what we want and speak our minds on whatever topic we deem necessary. But now, it's time to finish this ad break and end out the show.
Your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. Join the impact player Phil Rea and the Portuguese Man of War Choppy for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live every week on rantemradio.com. Get all our episodes over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
Hey everyone, this is Justin, one of your hosts of Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly uncensored and anti-PC look at entertainment, pop culture, professional wrestling, and current events. We also do a weekly top 10 list and fan casting. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or the Satchel app for Android, or you can download direct from Libsyn. So come on out of your safe space and join us in the real world, won't you?
Broadcasting from outside the Big Apple, this is WLWstudios.com, New York City.
We are back on the Midnight Jury, and I just want to thank all of you for tuning in, downloading, listening, whatever you did in order to hear my interview with Zach Ward. And of course, I want to thank Zach so much. I was talking to him on the break, and he's just a great guy, and he has a lot of work that he's getting ready to promote and things he's getting ready to do. And I told him, hey man, anytime you have anything you want to get the word out, I will do my best in whatever I can do to help promote it, whether it be on the Midnight Jury, the Midnight Mike Show, on Twitter, whatever I need to do, I will be willing to help him. And then if he wants to come back on the show and promote it, do another interview, hopefully he'll be back, and we would love to have him. You can, of course, follow him. I already said it, but I'll say it again, at Total Zach Ward on Twitter. Give him a follow, and if you tweeted him, like he said, you know, that's how we met. We ended up talking to each other, following each other, and he's such a cool guy. So I really do appreciate him coming on the show, and I can't thank him enough, and I can't thank any of you enough who have downloaded this episode, and we really do appreciate it. Remember, if you like what we do, go over to patreon.com/midnightjury. Help us out. We have the $3 monthly, $5, and $8 monthly options, and any bit helps and counts towards helping out this show go into its sixth year in March. And I want to remind everybody that February 3rd is the 59th anniversary of the Day the Music Died, the sad day in rock and roll history when Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper unfortunately all died in a plane crash headed out of the Winter Dance Party tour. And we are going to be paying homage to them because I know next year is a 60th anniversary, but I'm a huge fan of Buddy Holly and Richie Valens. I have a lot of their albums, vinyl. That's the only way to do it, vinyl. And I have some of Richie Valens' original Delphi record vinyls. And we're going to be in February paying homage to these men. And we're doing, like I said, everyone's going to be celebrating the, not celebrating, but you, whatever word you want to use for it, the 60th anniversary next year of this tragedy. But we want to do it a year early just to show everybody that we're really paying attention. February 3rd is a sad day. So what we're going to do on the Midnight Jury in February is dedicated to these guys, and we're going to be reviewing the Buddy Holly story that stars Gary Busey, and we're also going to be reviewing Lou Diamond Phillips in La Bamba, and that'll be a blast, and I can't wait to do those and hear some of the music and enjoy it with the rest of the guys. So that's what we're going to be doing in February, so please tune in for that. We have some classic episodes coming out in January from the past. I can't wait to put those out. It's all going to be a blast. Like I said in the intro, from the Midnight Jury Vault, we're going to pull out some of those old classic episodes from our first year or two, and those are always fun to do. So follow us at Midnight Jury on Twitter. Follow myself or my solo show if you'd like. It's at Midnight Mike Show. And like I said, it's a different spelling. It's the alternate spelling of Midnight, and that is MIDNITE Mike Show. And if you want to hear the Midnight Mike Show, every now and then I'll release an episode on WLWstudios.com. But that's just to let everybody know what they're missing, because it is exclusive to our Patreon supporters, and those people are the best. From WLW Studios North and the Midnight Jury compound right outside of the Big Apple, New York City, on a chilly winter night, I am your 21st century broadcasting marvel, Midnight Mike Norenganger. And for myself, for my co-host, and for Zach, who was one of the most amazing guests we've ever had on the show, have a great night, be safe, enjoy yourself, and I can't wait to see you next time. I'm too